from the pages from the extra parak from Eretz HaTorah. It's not in the Sefer. So each time I think we'll go back to the Sefer, so I'll do one more. Probably this way we'll finish the entire thing. Because each one has a certain tzad that was not brought out in the earliest if. And so we'll try to do a few more of the seifim from this extra parak that's not part of the Sefer Eretz HaTorah, but it is Eretz HaTorah. We're up to Seif Yud Gimel. Page 324. Here Rav Kook speaks about the danger in our times of presenting the yesodos of Yiddishkeit in a simplistic, unsophisticated way. And even though in the past that was something that was taken for granted, that there's a clear division between Talmid Chachamim, great people, and simple Jews, and that the Talmid Chachamim were Isaac and there in Yonim, and the people who were people of Pnimius were learning Pnimius at Torah and very, very deep and sophisticated concepts of Torah, and the Hamayin Am, the typical average Eilech Hayid, was Isaac in his Seder of Mishnayis in Ein Yaakov, and if there was some Musar, it was more of the style of Tzanarana that our grandmothers and great-grandmothers were all saying, to learn Medrash and to learn already. Mesillas Yesharim is already very, very, very advanced and was not something that the Hamayin Am, that simple Jews were Isaac, and even that. So that sustained us through all the years of Galus. And the women Bechlau were again, Tzanarana, Saint Tillim. They were different little Bichelach, little booklets with the Midrashim, stories of Tzadikim, and so on. Many places in his writings of Hook tells us that that's not possible anymore. That doesn't mean to say that there aren't still some Jews who can live that way. But as a general mahalach, the boundaries that separate between the Talmid Chachamim and the simple Jew of the shtetl, those walls are no longer there. For whatever reason, that's not important for now. But those walls are no longer there. And the reality is that the Hamayin Am, that the simple Jew nowadays, is exposed to a great deal of sophistication. Sophistication at work, sophistication in technology, sophisticated ideas if somebody has studied secular subjects in literature, history. Even a person that reads, that has the misfortune of reading newspapers, and is up on current events and studies, reads essays, editorials, and so on, is exposed to very, very sophisticated secular ideas. Anybody who went to secular school is naturally exposed to information and ideas that our ancestors, growing up in the shtetlach, and even in the big towns, with a few exceptions, that they went looking into Haskalah, into these things, but the simple Jew, people like us, in the earlier generations, the entire life was very unsophisticated. It was very, very, very poshut. Life was very poshut. And we get a taste of that when we have the schus to meet Jews from that generation. there's still a taste of that. And it's something which is very, very beautiful. But with all of the crying and krechtsing about how we can't recapture that, we have to do something about the matzav that we're in. So we would enjoy the luxury of being simple Jews. Like I saw two or three times there are bumper stickers, Poshet the Yid. It says on the, you ever see this? It says on the sticker on the back of a car, it says Poshet the Yid. A Poshet the Yid doesn't put a sticker that says Poshet the Yid on the back of his car. You understand?
Even he is.
I'm saying that it means that he's not. It means that he's not. If you ever met the Poshet the Yid, he would look at such a thing that it's from another planet. Because there's something that's not Poshet to put a sticker that says I'm a Poshet the Yid. The beauty of a Poshet the Yid is that he doesn't define himself as anything. He's just trying to be an Eved Hashem. He's trying to do the right thing. You ask him, oh, you're a Poshet the Yid? I'm a Poshet the Yid. I'm a Yid. I try to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm not Poshet the Yid. So the fact that someone puts a sticker that says, I'm a Poshet the Yid, I don't know if that's the Nusach, what it says exactly. Yeah? I'm a Poshet the Yid. You should tell the person that by putting that there, you already messed your pashtus up. And if you want to be a Poshet the Yid, take that thing off and just drive your car without stickers on it. Or put smileys or something, but not I'm a Poshet the Yid. It's a Poshet the Yid. What's the pshitas in that? There's something very, very beautiful. Very beautiful in the pashtus of a real Poshet the Yid, but we already all ate from the Eitz HaDaas, you understand? Our grandparents didn't eat from that tree. They ate from the Eitz HaChaim, they didn't eat from the Eitz HaDaas. And they lived. They lived. They had different kinds of upheaval, but they lived. There were some that went out and did. They were attracted, Kitav l'Inayim, they went looking for the Eitz HaDaas, and they left the Dalet Amos of the town. And when they ate from the Eitz HaDaas, they suffered an unbelievable culture shock when they ate from the Eitz HaDaas. Now, we're not shocked in that way. We're not shocked. My wife and I were talking about this last night. Maybe somebody here has an Eitzah. What happens if you have a very, very intelligent teenage daughter, a wonderful, sweet, frum girl, who is not allowed to be with the computer and to be with television and to be socializing and with the guys and all of this stuff. Loves to read. You try getting some of the English, the frum novels, and she has to prevent herself from going to the bathroom. You'll forgive me for saying this, right? It's the same theme over and over again, seeing the light, etc. Even the titles, with a few very, 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 very rare exceptions. And loves to read. When this tzedekus of a teenager was a little girl, so there were these cute, sweet little books about horses and stuff like that. Then, as the little girl grows into a big girl, and is at that time 15, 16 years old, I don't know if you've noticed this, every single book that says on it young adults in the public library is softcore pornography. It's all pornography. Different madrigas, but pornography. And the theme of every book is boy and girl. Not the farm and grandma and grandpa. Boy and girl. And the complications. As if they're not going to have enough of it later on. The complications of boy and girl. And the consequences of these relationships. Books that are written by mostly dysfunctional people. And the shelves are filled with, it says, young adults. Plain schmutz. Not schmutz. The child thinks deeply, is a sensitive girl. and she's looking for something, the depth of pnimius. You try as much as possible to talk to her about the classics, books from the 1800s, early 1900s, books that we read, that are familiar with, where the content, the toichen, is more toichen of pnimius in the secular world, without, to a large extent, not polluted by the schmutz, or even if it is, it's more in a Victorian way, and in other words, more of a very, very restrained and covered. And the child says, no, this is not my world, this is a different world. So I said, parents say, it's interesting to read about earlier world, and should try to relate it to your world. We've eaten from the Eitz HaDaas. And how do we get back to the Eitz HaChaim? How do we get back to the tree of life? So, one mahalach is, which has been practiced by small, isolated groups, but in different ways by many, book burning. Book burning. There are different ways to burn books. You don't have to set them on fire. Nazis do stuff like that. You don't have to set them on fire, but bans and elimination, bans and all kinds of things like that. And can't go to the library, can't step foot in the library, and can't... So that's one mahalach. But what does the child do with the emptiness? So I'm giving this as a marshal that parents nowadays are struggling with. But really, it's the matzav that we all are confronting. That way of talking day and night about how the Eitz HaDaas is forbidden, that way is not going to ultimately be successful. When you have someone who's filled with life, and all they're hearing is don't eat from the Eitz HaDaas, and you don't provide them with an Eitz HaChaim, so they can't find themselves. So what some of the girls do, plus as far as getting together and having different events, there are a lot of wonderful Jews that are trying to make it more interesting for the girls to have an opportunity to get together and to have nice talks. Baruch Hashem, there's a lot of good people that are working hard on these things. But still, they're left sitting with, listening with the earplugs to the same songs, you know, 1,000 times. Being terribly, terribly bored and feeling terribly empty. Knowing that there are a couple hundred shelves in the library that could provide them with some relief from this boredom and emptiness. And so for years I tried to bring home, even though they're expensive, I tried to get some of these Jewish novels. And as I said, some of them are nice. But there's a certain type of a child that tires very, very quickly from those. And is interested in the world. Not chas v'shalom in bad stuff, and good stuff. So even children now, at a very young age, our children at a very young age, not everyone, but many of our children at a very young age, are much, much more sophisticated than our grandmothers. When they were 70, I mean, I never had a grandmother that, I don't know, but grandmother that, that the grandmothers that are 70, 80 years old. Much more sophisticated. The things that they have on their minds and that they think about and that they wonder about is much, much more sophisticated than the from the Haim, you know, the old timers. Rav Kook recognized this change. Again, why it happened and how the doors of the gates of the ghetto were thrown open. That's a different Indian to study. That's not for now. And Rav Kook saw that everybody was krechzing, gewalt, gewalt, what are we going to do? And the only answer that they could come up with was more bans. More bans, more prohibitions. More isurim, more no, no, no. In other words, more reminders of how dangerous the Eitz HaDaas is and how one has to stay away from the Eitz HaDaas. what do you do now that you're away from the Yetzer Hara? So I was asking my wife, so what do the girls do? What do the girls do in Yerushalayim and B'nai Brak? And they finish school early, you know. Netz Yisrael, they have very little school. It's too expensive to run. So they finish in the early afternoon. Then you have to pay for chugim if you want and extra things. But they finish, so they try to get all the people could afford to try to get the girls to go to different chugim. You know what I'm talking about? Like extra curricular stuff. They have in Yerushalayim and Beit Shemesh. I mean, you have to pay for that. It's not in the school. So they try to get them to chugim. They finish, many of the girls finish there by 2 o'clock. It's done. The understanding is that they're supposed to be helping the mommies with the children, as it was in the Haim. But it's not the Haim. So, what I asked my wife, like, what do those girls do? How does it work in B'nai Brak and Yerushalayim in these neighborhoods? Like, what happens after the, you know? So they, since Eretz Yisrael, Hashem should watch over it and everybody there. Since Eretz Yisrael, the neighborhoods are much more street friendly and open in that way, and the weather is nicer for a couple more months than it is in Chutz Laaretz, so the kids have a little bit more of each other. How productive are the conversations? Okay, you know, okay, but it's part of the mitzvahs, and especially girls like to talk, and it's good. They're with each other. But especially when it comes to New York, and it's dark already by 4:45, right? It's already shkia, 4:30 something. It's already dark. And everybody's retreating into the home. And everything is awesome. So there's a very big problem. Rav Kook was, as usual, was one of the first people, and to this day, it's not like it's such a big island, of others who recognize that things have changed and accept. Instead of cracking and complaining, it can't be this way, it can't be this way, we can't have this, we have to go back to the old way. Rav Kook was very forward-thinking, and he said, Rabbi Yisai, it has to be this way. And Rav Kook explained in many of his writings why this change has taken place. There's a reason why. Before Mashiach, this has happened. We spoke about it many times in Eretz Yisrael. There's a reason why. It's not stam. There's a reason why. So instead of krechzing about the past and how we can't have that anymore, and living in the past, while they're not really working because the kids are up to other stuff. They're doing other things. Remember where I grew up, there was a chassidish shtibel, and there were strong, strong satma chassidim, wonderful people. We were all in our neighbor, the guys, the caravas, and it was beautiful. Remember that the Rebbe was a big tzaddik. He passed away many years ago. That the Rebbe's daughter, we used to see that she would sit in the corner. She was reading like racy novels. You know what I mean? The Rebbe's daughter was reading like not nice stuff on Shabbos with black stockings. But she was reading like racy novels with bad covers. Well, the Rebbe's standing, you know, with his eyes closed, and the Olam is around 30 feet away at the staircase. His daughter's sitting with a dirty novel. You see, something has to fill in that space between the Rebbe and the daughter. To fill in that empty space. What do you fill it with? It's a problem. In Rav Kook's world, he wasn't talking about improving the level of our literature with children. But with adults, he was. And you know that one of the big campaigns of Rav Kook's life, when he came to Eretz Yisrael, it started even before, was that he tried very hard to befriend the Yiddish and Hebrew writers, as you know, to befriend them, whereas the other tzaddikim pushed them all away because they had a bad smell from Chil Shabbos and Tarfis and so on. Rav Kook was makarv. Rav Kook was makarv. The way that in our times, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was makarv, people like this. And he tried to take these talented people and to beg them to return and to look back into the shayrish of who we are and to write about, to use their poetic and literary skills to write on subjects of Kedusha, to paint paintings of Kedusha, and so on. But the bottom line is that Rav Kook said that we can't afford in our generation, which he was already talking about over 100 years ago he was talking about this. We can't afford to remain unsophisticated. We can't afford to. It's just things have changed. Now let's learn. Yud Gimel. Sorry for the long introduction. Hakaras HaPshutis. Hakaras HaPshutis. The simple way of understanding Yiddishkeit. Our simple familiarity with Yiddishkeit that we had, as I said, in the earlier years. Habanalius. Banalius. That Nedushas Mufarim. In other words, that we're already chewed through and through over and over again, that have become already passe. That already, it's already old fashioned. Shel Mahus HaYahadis. Regarding the Mahus of Yiddishkeit. Which are beautiful, they're beautiful things. And to this day, if you go to this farm store, you will see, the only thing is now they have beautiful covers and looks like, and it says on it, it will say something like, Emunas HaYahadis. Something like that. And then you open it, and you see. Same old stuff. Just the same old stuff. Same old stuff is holy. Because it's Chazals. And he'll bring down something from a sefer that he thought was some big Einfeld, like some big revelation that he found this in the sefer. And again, it's pure and holy. But the only thing different about this sefer is that it has a nicer cover, and the print is modern print. They used a better font than they did in 1962. But it's mamish the same old stuff. If you have a little bit of a Mavinus with Sfarim, you could see this when you open a sefer in 30 seconds. You just look through. I'm not going to give you the codes. There are certain codes of how to figure this out. It takes 30 seconds to see. Same old stuff. You set it right on the cover. S-O-S. Same old stuff. Very sweet. Good, holy Jew. You make a shidduch with him for sure. But S-O-S. Same old stuff. It's already, these are the Hakaras HaPshutis. That a person who has learned a little bit, is more than familiar with, has heard over and over and over again. And if someone hasn't heard it, when they hear it, they can feel that it's been said over and over and over again. Even though it might be the first time they're hearing it. Regarding the Mahus of Yiddishkeit, the essence of Yiddishkeit. Shein nois nois es koich ha-chayim b'soich ha-hanhog ha-masis. Rav Kook says that these simple ways of recognizing or of understanding the essence of Yiddishkeit give a certain koich ha-chayim that are meant to give a certain koich ha-chayim a life into the hanhog ha-masis and into our day-to-day lives as Jews. To have a sense of what Yiddishkeit is about in our day-to-day lives. Hinan holchos u'mismaitetos. What does it mean, holchos u'mismaitetos? It means that they're crumbling. To be mitmotet, mismaitet means to fall apart. Weakening. Getting weaker and weaker and weaker. Having less and less and less of an effect. Less and less and less of an effect. Like the good intention teachers and rabbanim and Rosh Hashivas and whatever, were saying those things, Barab. And you listen to it, and you know that you've heard that thousands of times, and it didn't have much of an impact upon you the first time you heard it, the way that it was said. And it's just maybe being, again, repackaged, or they'll put a story with it that they found in a different sefer to put a story in to try to give a little bit of a zap. Or some of the more desperate ones will look in the Nesivos Shalom, which is the only Chassidish Sefer they could understand. So look in the Nesivos Shalom to try to find something that looks a little bit more interesting, that'll spruce up the 1955 Shmuz. But this is what's going on. And this is being touted as the Mahus of Yiddishkeit. This is what Yiddishkeit is about. And it worked. In 1955, it worked. To a large extent, the oil that it was addressing, again, were very, very simple people who were not exposed to sophistication. It was simple, Eilige, Shtetliden, whether in Europe or in Israel, the Svadisha in Maladaber, the Pashtas of how they were raised. And that was fine. Since the Svadisha are the last of the Mohicans, I don't know if that's the correct way to put it based upon that particular book, but since the Svadisha still have a chush for Emunah Pshuta, they could still have his oiris from very simple things. Many Svadim. They could still have his oiris from a Chaykli Yisrael and from other things that others don't, because since they have a very, very strong chush, the Svadisha, Shemuna Pshuta, and they have a very big, very, very big Messiah in that Indian of Tfila and Pashtas, and only recently were the Svadisha exposed to the secular world. In Europe it was much, much earlier, it was long ago. The Svadisha much later. So the Svadisha can still, if you look at a lot of the Svadisha Svarim that come out now, the Hintika Svadisha Svarim, you know, on Parish and Mashav, also has that Pashtas. But for the Svadisha, there are Svadim that can still find in that a taste that sustains them. Because of the Pashtas of Amunah that Beast, that Baruch Hashem, that there's that corner of Klai Yisrael that still has a Shaychus to that Pashtas. It's very hard to hold on to. But there are Svadisha even that are still holding on to that Baruch Hashem. Especially in Yisrael, you see. There are. But the holchos and mismaitetais is falling apart. The effect, the impact of these words is getting weaker and weaker and weaker. Ha'akara ha'klolis, and at the same time, what's happening is that the ha'akara ha'klolis, when it comes to secular knowledge, popular secular knowledge, doesn't have to even be something so fancy. But ha'akara ha'klolis, he lamala mihen. The concepts that they're reading about and that they're hearing about in the secular world are more sophisticated than the bubamaisis. And the old school is saying, I don't understand. This is what we grew up on. And we had such a chiyus from it, and it gave us such a feeling for Yiddishkeit, and how come it's not working for you? So I know what. We know why. It has to have a nicer cover. And we have to use a different print. So they make a nicer cover, and they make a different print, and it's still not. Well, we have to put in some stories. Because stories, everybody likes stories. We'll put in a few stories. Look, if somebody grew up on English literature. American literature, not as much, but if you grew up on English literature, there's very little I really particularly care about about England. There's not much that I could say that's positive about it. I don't mean to insult any of my English friends. I'm not talking about the Yidden that are in England. But English literature, as far as literature is concerned, there's a chshivus to it in that world of literature that the Americans have been trying for a long time to catch up, and they're not able to. There's a chshivus to it. Unfortunately, I spent a lot of time in that sugya, and there's a chshivus to it. So somebody who is raised with the chshivus of thoughts, of emotions, the way they're expressed in literature, the human condition is expressed in literature. And then you put in front of that person the SOS Sefer, same old stuff, Sefer, which is not describing the condition of the human being in any way that's even close to what the person read in the essay, the book, the poem. So what do you expect to happen? Jews are going to begin to define their essence by Canterbury Tales. You understand? And if you've read Canterbury Tales, then, no, don't read it. Then you know that is a terrible, terrible tragedy. That a Jew should go around thinking that what he finds in Canterbury Tales speaks to him more than what he sees in Torah. What he sees in Torah. And because of that Torah, the covet of Torah is lost. Because of that, the covet of being a Jew is lost. And for lack of any way to define oneself, because everybody's looking for some way to define oneself. If you're an intelligent person, you're growing up, you want to know, who am I? So instead of being able to find that in the Svarim, in Torah, they find it in secular books and secular music and art. That's where we're holding. And the sweet old Chevra was saying, we don't understand. Why aren't you learning? If you'd be learning these things that we learned back in the 50s, then you'll be as firm as we are. And it's back to the same old story. The Rebbe's crying, standing in the Olamus of Atzilus B'Yetziyasiyah, and his daughter is 30 feet away reading a filthy novel. Because it's just a matter of time. That there are other emotions that children would like to explore. And what's in between? So Cook says, when it comes to the simple explanations of Yiddishkeit, the effect, the impact is getting weaker and weaker and weaker. Ha'karach lolis, he lamalamehen. The general secular hakara, recognition of self, who am I? If you start to read literature and poetry, appears to the person or the child as much, much deeper, as speaking much more to me. It's speaking to me. I see myself in this novel. I see myself in this poem. I don't see myself in this schmooze. I don't see myself in this schmooze. That spells a lot of trouble. That's very dangerous. I'm going to tell you something that I found to be shocking. My wife teaches senior girls in high school. Wonderful, wonderful Torah girls. And she's been doing that for many years. These are seniors. This particular class was not the highest class, the strongest class, like a Beinoni class. And my wife, we were sitting and talking yesterday, the children, and my wife said that she asked the girls, she's very open with them and they're open with her, and she asked the girls, this is what's officially, I guess, would be in the category, as much as I hate categories, as modern Orthodox school, but the finest modern Orthodox school is not co-ed, fine modern Orthodox school, very wonderful teachers, wonderful people, and she asked the girls, she wanted to know, what are you looking for in a husband, Mitzvah Shem, the 12th grade? What are you looking for as far as how much Torah they're going to learn? And my wife made it clear, I'm not talking about your husband being in Kollel, full-time learning. I'm talking about what on a typical day. And out of 20-plus girls, my wife told me that there wasn't one who said that they see any importance at all for the husband learning Torah. The consensus was that the main thing is he should be a nice guy. Have good midas, be a nice guy. good midas and be nice. My wife did say that the one girl who would have thought differently happened to be absent yesterday. Is she going to talk to her? I know the family that girl comes. I know the parents, and I think it will be a different response. And my wife tried, you know, she was so taken aback, she tried to squeeze out of them something. Listen to this and take it to heart. My wife's going to talk to the principal about it. She's already spoke to a few of the teachers about it. What significance, my wife says, does Torah have? If your husband learns Torah, and over again, if he goes to shul on Shabbos, and he's a nice guy. What about learning? Again, not kolel. What about learning? My wife said, you could ask her. She's around. My wife said, not one girl. Zero. Zero. Not one. Senior girls. So then the terrorist, of course, is, don't worry. They're going to Eretz Yisrael. And then they come back to Eretz Yisrael, then they're going to start talking about the husband being in kol. They're going to hear the shmuzim, depending on which school they go to, some more, some less. They'll get the SOS. And maybe they'll come to that conclusion. But stop for a moment and think about this. 12th grade, all the years of education in a fine, wonderful institution. Not one girl, maybe my wife said, could be that in the higher class, there would have been a different musig, and the other teachers are going to see. But in this class, which is not the lowest, it's like a bainani. It's not nice to talk high, but you understand what I mean. It's it. But they're wonderful girls, and they're shonen mitzvahs, and they daven. Not one saw any inyan at all of learning Torah, of any importance of Torah. Daf Yomi, yeah, they heard there was a big thing in the stadium. It's really cool. Not one. So, 1 second. So, what are you going to do? First, you want to ice cream, of course. But then, you can't get depressed. You have to figure out, like, what's the inyan and to try to make things better, if it's possible. Kaidim Kol, what does it say about what they saw by their fathers? I'm sure you're all thinking about that. Like, what's going on in the house? What's going on in the house? They love their daddies. What's going on in the house? So I said to my wife, could be that the husbands are all going to learn, you know, they're not learning at home. They don't see this. So they learn when they go to a shia. They're not in the house, and the girls don't see it. That's a limud schus a little bit, okay. Let me say to the kid. But look, if your father loves Torah, you know it. You know what I'm saying? It's not something you could fake. Or something you could hide. If your father loves Torah, it comes out on Shabbos also, comes out at the table, comes out in everything. So, as Machshava, you could bring this up at any meetings that you want, at any boards that you want. What's going on in the house? Now, would this be the same response in a Beis Yaakov high school? I don't believe so. I believe it would be different. Would it be gewaldic? I don't know, depending upon the oilam. It would certainly be different. There would certainly be hands going up about the father living, because that's just something which was expressed much more about. In the school itself. But what happened in school? What did they absorb during the years in school? If after everything, so my wife tried to explain to them, you know, girls, without Yiddishkeit, we're not Jews. Without Torah, we're not Jews. That's the gas. The car stops running. You gotta put gas in the car. That's learning Torah. Without Torah, we can't go. The main thing is to be nice. To have good midos. And to be nice to your wife and to your children. To say Shema and to sing, you know, a little bit at the table. That was it. Not one. It wasn't like there was a fight among the girls. They were all masking. Nimnu v'gamru. Torah is not important. Would it be different in the higher class, in that modern Orthodox school? Stamma, it would be different. Would it be different in a Beit Yaakov school? Probably because of the way that they're inculcated with a certain thing. Probably. What do you think? Any ideas on this subject? I just found out about this yesterday. Every child knew that my father learns Mishnayos, learns Ein Yaakov, he's a Yid, and he sits and he learns Torah. There was something that was part of... It was something that was wired into their lives. It was part of their lives. It was part of their lives. And it's still part of the lives of many, many, many in Eretz Yisrael. The Bnei Torah, of course, and it's part of the lives of many people in Chutz La'aretz as well. But there seems to be a significant segment of wonderful Jews where it's not. And that is a danger to the continuity of Yiddishkeit. So the answer is, Eretz Yisrael will come to the rescue. I guess that's the hope, the expectation, that Eretz Yisrael will come to the rescue, and then the girls will come back with a certain bren, and then the fathers will be a little more embarrassed, so somehow things will work out, and whatever. But how this can... I understand this thing, Shapsi. That's not insulting at all to anybody. That's to say the Hadiris. That's what's been going on. You know, this interesting thing, that there used to be, when we were younger, that there was a place, let's say, called TI. The Modern Orthodox girls had a seminary. My wife went there. They had seminaries for Modern Orthodox. And the Modern Orthodox world was producing morris, teachers. Could somebody tell me where they are now? Where are these teachers that are coming, of Yiddishkeit, that are coming from the modern, of women, that are coming from Modern Orthodox world? Gone. It was. Amul Zgerein. It's finished. There's no such thing. If they go on, they become. Then they go into something else, and they become farfrumt, and then they. But as an institution, it's not happening. It's not happening. B'chlal, the whole thing with women teachers is at risk, because even in the Haredish Shevel, you want the girls to make a lot of money so they can support the husband's learning, and the teacher's not going to get a lot of money. So this, we're in this crazy, crazy like vacuum, and how do you get out of it? But it goes back to the core of what the Tzaddik here is talking about, that. That our generation can be saved only through exposure to deep, beautiful, rich, sophisticated Torah. Period. That's the Eitz Chaim. The Chashivas of Torah, the covet of Torah, the greatness of Torah, the depths of Torah, the beauty of Torah. How could it be that there are 12th grade girls, the beautiful, wonderful Jewish girls that are growing up in our community, and they're not, and they don't feel that greatness? All right, they didn't learn Gemara Rashi Tosis. Maybe they did. Maybe they did, and they don't feel the bigness of Torah. They don't feel the bigness of Torah. Well, our grandmothers would never touch a Gemara. Grandmothers, our mothers, our sisters would never touch a Gemara, and yet, my wife's grandmother, Allah Shalom Bubi Libba, she lived to be almost 100 years old. She was a relic. She lived in America from the 1920s or something. 1920s, 1930s. She didn't speak English at all. Every now and then she'd come up like with an English word, like a doozy, because I remember she said, yeah, this is zeir ostentatious. With a certain outfit that the girl was wearing, it was zeir ostentatious. She thought it was Yiddish. She probably thought it was a new Yiddish word that she understood. You could talk to her in English, but she didn't speak English at all. I mean, she didn't speak. She couldn't converse in English. You know what she used to talk about? I remember when I first met her, Bobby Libba, Meisha. She sits me down, she says, Meisha, she says, Ich hab gekannt Reb Chaim Eizer. I knew Reb Chaim Eizer. I met Reb Chaim Eizer in Vilna. And Reb Chaim Eizer was a prince. Reb Chaim Eizer. Zaidi, my husband, Olav Shalom, he died in early, many, many years ago, but I remember him from the beginning when we were first engaged. Zaidi learned with Rav Gustman, Zolgazonazayim. She says to me, do you know who Rav Gustman is? Rav Gustman is a boki b'chol atera kula. This is what the grandmother's telling me. You know who Rav Gustman is? She starts telling me Rav Gustman. Ich hab gesehen der Chofetz Chaim. She tells me what year she saw the Chofetz Chaim. She doesn't tell me when she was in the mall. This is a woman who never read a sefer. I mean, she read the Yiddish types, but she didn't learn. She never went to school. All she's telling me is the Chofetz Chaim, and she would talk about that all the time, Reb Chaim Eizer and the Chofetz Chaim. What the Chofetz Chaim said
when she remembers in 1924 what the Chofetz Chaim said, when all the women came to the shul and the Chofetz Chaim was talking to them, and she says what the Chofetz Chaim was saying. She never went to school. But the Torah to her was the whole chiyus. She would sit, when we were talking at the table of Torah, she didn't understand, but you had to look at her face. The other women, they're talking about this and that, and Bubi Lieber sitting there, and talking in Gemara. And she's sitting there like this, with the look on her face. And when we were engaged, when we got engaged, so everybody's talking about, what do you give for engagement to him? And she brings me Rav Gustman's Sefer on Baba Kama. Signed. She brings me Rav Gustman an engagement present. And she says, this is a good Sefer. It's Kedai to learn in their Sefer. I would say, Bubi, you read this at all? She says, Hosea, a good Sefer. Rav Gustman, ooh, Rav Gustman, ooh, ooh, ooh. I can good learn in there, Rav Gustman. I can good learn. Well, she was right. Rav Gustman can good learn. Rav Gustman can good. He was best friends with Mario's grandfather. I can good learn. But she was the chashivus of Torah. There was a feeling for the greatness, for the bigness of Torah. And it's amazing. She was completely unsophisticated. She never was exposed to any of the depths of Yiddishkeit, I mean, of Torah, just the Messiah from the mothers. But there was such a hergish of the greatness of Torah and the importance of learning. Learn. When they would be talking, the women would be talking, and then if the sons-in-law would start to get involved in any of the discussions with the women, so Bubi Lieber would say something like, "What are you talking about, man? Learn. What are you here talking with ladies? What's the matter with you? That's what you're talking about. Learn." Such a hakar. And now, turn the clock ahead. She was nifta maybe 20 years ago, something like that, 15, 20 years ago. Turn the clock ahead. Not even. Maybe 13, 14. Turn the clock ahead. Talk Shanai and Gimel. My wife talks to a class of senior girls in the premier high school for girls. Anybody interested in Torah? No, I should be a nice guy. Nice guy. Of course, cute. I mean, to leave that out, cute, normal, nice. Cute, normal, nice. Those are the qualifications to be a Jewish father and husband. Cute, normal, nice. In whatever order that particular girl is holding, cute, normal, nice, cute, normal, normal, nice, cute. But that's the basic surah of a yid. That's the basic surah of a yid. At least, again, there's only a sampling. I'm not saying, but it means we got to do something. Help. Something has to be done. So you can make all the fanciest meetings. You can march at every parade you like, and you could spend millions of dollars on the curriculum. What's going on? If we're losing that chesivus of Torah, a feeling for Torah, and how great Torah is, and how Torah is everything, we can't live for a second. It's what we eat, what we drink, what we breathe, what we sleep. How could it be? The beginning of the end, not chalila that to despair, it gets to mischazik, but the beginning is what Cook is describing. Listen, the girls' iPod, iPad, iPhone, smartphone, dumb phone, Androids, whatever they use. This is like, they're getting bombarded by interesting stuff. Interesting stuff, they're getting bombarded by it. They say their teachers like to look at it too. Teachers also like it. Their teachers even communicate with them on it. I'm not saying they should or they shouldn't, I'm just saying they see this. There's a certain excitement in that. And the information comes on these machines very, very easily. You don't have to go to the library. You don't have to look it up. It just comes at you. And they're interested. And they're excited by all kinds of stuff. What about the Torah? The Torah? Nope. What's the Torah? Put your finger inside Rashi. Try to read Rashi. I don't understand this language. And once I finally start to get a little bit of this language, then along comes this big rabbi and he writes some kind of, here's a strange handwriting. And he writes Rashi. I don't know what happened. I was just starting to get a little bit of hang of it. And then, what is this? So where's the chashivus of Torah? Where's the pnimis? Where's the beauty of Torah? We have no choice. That's what Rav Kook is saying.
The Eitz HaChaim has to be opened up for every single Jewish boy and girl from the earliest age, the Tree of Life. And to shower them and to blow them away with the depths of Torah. Of course, with Seichel, according to the level of the child and the time in life, but the Pnimis. You can't hold on to Torah if at the same time they're being exposed to sophistication in the secular world, then it's not like Bubi Liba anymore. They don't. I told you that over the years, my wife, she said, this is already a few years ago, that she asked the girls in the class, when the Baba Rebbe was Nifta, when Reb Shlomo was Nifta, she asked, who here ever heard of the Baba Rebbe? Zero. There was one girl after class, she didn't want to raise her hand in front of the other girls, and she said she, of course, knows the Baba Rebbe. The reason she knows the Baba Rebbe is because her grandfather is a Baba Rebbe. So she says she knows. But otherwise, the other girls that didn't have that, not one girl heard of the Baba Rebbe. The Baba Rebbe is the shining light of our generation. Not one girl heard. I don't want to finish the story. How many girls heard of, just fill in any movie star or celebrity? So what does that mean? Rabbi Liba didn't hear of those celebrities. She heard of the Chavos Chaim HaChaim Eisner. Greatness of Torah. The measure of a Jew's greatness is Limud HaTorah. If that's not felt, then we can't hold on. So we're depending on Eretz Yisrael. And if not for Eretz Yisrael, Lulei Sarosu Shashuai Azavarti Bain. If not for the Inyan of Eretz Yisrael, Hashem sent this Inyan in our generation, that the kids can go to Eretz Yisrael, especially the girls, but boys also, if not for that, it would be, what would be if not for that? You can't even think about it. If they're able to go and to hear and to see people who are if not for that, what would be? So we have to do something from the earliest age so that when our daughters are asked, growing up, and I'll tell you the truth, I was proud because my 15-year-old was shocked just as much as we were shocked by this. But she couldn't believe it, that was the response in my wife's class. She couldn't believe it, that's what the girls said. What do the fathers have to begin to think about in their homes? What do the mothers have to begin to think about at the conversations with their children, with their daughters? There's a lot here that we have to think about. Does it mean that we'll have some more board meetings about it? And then the school will get for $140,000 some big new exponent curriculum. Watch. Let's see what happens. Something else in the curriculum? Another midterm, another final? It's going to be called the final of Pnimius, a midterm on Pnimius. Or is it going to be something real that we could do, that we could give over to our children, to our grandchildren? Hashem Zbog should help, that everybody should be safe, and should be luchtig, and we should go in the right way, and we should love His Torah, and He should give us His Torah with ahava, and we should open our eyes and our ears and our mouths to drink the Torah that He's giving us.